Chapter 24. Lusana brought his left hand up to eye level and then snapped the rod forward with a deft wrist action. The small wad of cheese clung to the hook, plopped daintily into the river, and then sank out of sight. The fish were there. Lusana's instincts began to vibrate in anticipation. He stood thigh-deep amid the shadows of the trees leaning over the bank and slowly reeled in the line. On his eighth cast he had a strike, a hard splashing strike that nearly tore the rod from his relaxed grip. He had hooked a tiger fish, an old-world relative of the ferocious piranha of the South American Amazon. He gave the fish its head and eased out more line. He had little choice. The rod was nearly bent double. Then, abruptly, before the battle had a chance to warm up, the tiger fish circled a sunken tree stump, broke the line, and escaped. "I did not think it possible that anyone could entice a tiger fish with a bit of cheese," said Colonel Jemana. He was sitting on the ground, his back resting against a tree. He held the envelope containing the brief outline of Operation Wild Rose in his hand. "The bait is irrelevant if the prey is hungry," said Lusana. He waded back to shore and began tying a new leader to his line. Jemana rolled on his side and scanned the landscape to see if Lusana's security guards were properly stationed and alert. It was a wasted gesture. No soldiers served with greater fervor and loyalty. They were lean and hard, picked by Lusana personally, not so much for their fearlessness and rugged physiques as for their intelligence. They stood poised in the underbrush, their weapons held in determined, steady hands. Lusana turned to resume his casting. "What do you make of it?" he asked. Jemana stared at the envelope and twisted his face in a skeptical expression. "A rip-off. A $2 million rip-off." "You don't buy it, then?" "No, sir. Frankly, I do not." Jemana rose to his feet and brushed off his combat uniform. "I think this Emma has fed Major Machita cheap bits and pieces as a build-up for the big score." He shook his head. "This report tells us nothing. It only indicates that the whites are going to launch a major terrorist attack somewhere in the world with a group of blacks posing as AAR followers. The South Africans are not so stupid as to risk international repercussions on such an absurd ploy." Lusana cast his line. "But suppose, just suppose, Prime Minister Kurtzman has seen the handwriting on the wall. He might be tempted to take a desperate gamble, a last throw of the dice." "But how?" asked Jemana. "Where?" "The answers to those questions, my friend, come only with $2 million. I still only see this Operation Wild Rose as a swindle." "Actually, the scheme smacks of genius," Lusana continued. "If the strike involved heavy casualties, the nation that was the victim would then be provoked into turning their sympathies away from our cause and voting arms and aid for Kurtzman's government." "The questions are unending," said Jemana. "What nation is singled out as the target?" "The United States is my guess." Jemana threw the envelope to the ground. "Ignore this stupid deception, my general. Put the money to better use. Heed my proposal for a series of raids to throw fear into the hearts of the whites." Jemana was met with a steely stare. "You know my feelings on butchery." Jemana pushed ahead. 1,000 hit-and-run assaults on cities, villages, and farms, from one end of the country to the other, would put us in Pretoria by Christmas. "We will continue to conduct a sophisticated war," Lusana said coldly. "We will not act like primitive rabble. In Africa, it is often necessary to drive the people with an iron hand. They seldom know what is best for them." "Tell me, Colonel, I'm always willing to learn. Who knows what's best for the African people?" Jemana's face purpled with controlled anger. "Africans know what is best for Africans." Lusana ignored the slur against his American blood. He could sense the impulses swirling in Jemana, the hatred of all things foreign, the driving ambition and the newly discovered luxury of power mingled with a distrust of modern ways, an almost childlike acceptance of bloodthirsty savagery. Lusana began to wonder if he hadn't made an enormous error in appointing Jemana to a high level of command. Before Lusana could focus on the problems that might arise between them, the soft padding sound of feet emanated from beyond the lip of the riverbank. The security guards tensed and then relaxed as Major Machita dog-trotted down the path into view. He came to a halt in front of Lusana and saluted. "One of my agents has just arrived from Pretoria with Emma's report on the Fox Farm raid." "What did he uncover?" "Emma says he was unable to find evidence the defense forces had a hand in it." Lusana looked thoughtful. "So it's back to the opening play. It seems incredible that a force can murder nearly 50 people and go unidentified," said Machita. "Could Emma have lied?" "Possibly, but he would have no reason for doing so." Lusana did not answer. He turned his attention back to the fish. His line whispered over the running water. Machita looked questioningly at Jumana, but the colonel avoided his gaze. Machita stood there confused for a moment, wondering what had caused the atmosphere of tension that hovered over his two superiors. After a long, uneasy silence, he nodded at the envelope. "You've reached a decision concerning Operation Wild Rose, General?" "I have," Lusana answered as he reeled the line in. Machita remained silent, waiting. "I intend to pay Emma his 30 pieces of silver for the rest of the plan," Lusana finally said. Jumana raged. "No, it is a fraud. Even you, my general, are not entitled to throw our army's funds away stupidly." Machita caught his breath and tensed. The colonel had overstepped his rank. And yet Lusana kept his back to the shore and nonchalantly went about his fishing. "I'll remind you," he said over his shoulder with quiet authority. "The lion's share of our treasury came from me. What is mine I can take back, or I can use as I please." Jumana clenched his hands in tight knots, and the cords in his neck stood out. He made a move toward the water's edge, his lips drawn back over his teeth. Then, suddenly, as if a circuit breaker somewhere in his gray matter had overloaded and clicked off, all expression of rage vanished, and he smiled. His words came casually, but with an undercurrent of bitterness. "I apologize for my remarks. I am overtired." Machita decided then and there that the colonel was a danger that bore watching. He could see that Jumana would never fully accept the position of number two man. "Forget it," said Lusana. "The important thing now is to lay our hands on Wild Rose." "I will make arrangements for the exchange," said Machita. "You will do more than that," Lusana said, facing the shore again. "You will create a plan to make the payoff. Then you will kill Emma." Jumana's mouth hung open. "You never intended to give away the $2 million, he sputtered. Lusana grinned. "Of course not. If you had been patient, you could have spared us your juvenile outburst." Jumana made no reply. There was nothing he could say. He widened his smile and shrugged. It was then Machita caught the imperceptible shift of the eyes. Jumana was not looking directly at Lusana. His vision was aimed at a spot in the river 10 feet upstream from the general. "Guards!" Machita screamed, pointing frantically. "The river! Fire! For God's sake, fire!" The security men's reaction time measured less than 2 seconds. Their shots exploded in Machita's ears, and the water erupted a few feet from Lusana in 100 shattered geysers. 20 feet of hideous brown scale burst through the surface and rolled over and over, its tail thrashing crazily as the bullets thudded into the thick hide like hail. Then the firing ceased, and the great reptile made one more convulsive revolution and sank beneath the surface. Lusana stood in his wading boots, his eyes wide, his body stunned into immobility. He stared dazedly into the clear water at the hulk of the crocodile, now gracefully tumbling along the riverbed in the current. On the bank, Machita trembled, not so much at Lusana's narrow escape as at the satanic expression on Jumana's Neanderthal-shaped face. The bastard had known, Machita thought. He had known the instant the crocodile slithered off the far bank and homed in on the general, and yet he had said nothing.